Sacktown Sports.
Check us out on YouTube. Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
Chris, I think we have good news here.
Really? We could use some.
Okay. I'm confirming now.
Okay.
See it on the text line, but would like to...
double your sources?
Yes. Confirm this. I'm looking. The Kings are underdogs tomorrow. Minus one.
Really? Mm-hmm. I think they were 1.5-point favorites on Tuesday, right?
That's right.
Something like that?
That's right.
Well, I guess in a weird way, it's a small victory that it's only 1.5 after you get beat by 36. You know?
It's just one.
Yeah.
Right now.
Oh, it's just one?
Bet the house.
Like, according to CBSSports.com.
1-800 gambler.
Right.
It might change. It'll change tomorrow. It'll probably move again. But, yeah. I like that. I'm very much into that.
I'm not going to read much into it. 1 point is literally marginal. I don't think that's really any indication of anything. Again, I'm surprised that it's only one after a 36-point win. I don't think that the Kings are going to go into Friday and say, hey, did you see that we're 1 point underdogs? Like, that really is motivating me. It's fueling my passion for tonight's game, and I really want to stick it to Vegas.
Well, no, but they don't do that anyway. That's not who the Kings are.
Why does it make you feel better?
Just from a fan standpoint, whenever they're the
it's 1 point though.
Yeah, but it was only 1.5.
Yeah,
it was.
So
only
you feel like expectations have lowered.
Yes, okay. In my opinion. Okay. And yeah, either way, it's a bit of a draw. But I don't know when the Kings are the favorite, they don't play like it.
Let me
most
see.
Of the time.
I'm guarantee the Kings have to, like, this is how novice I am about camp. They release against the spread numbers. Yeah.
Do we think
that the Kings are like winners this season in
no
general?
Way.
There's probably no way, right? With all the amount of the Charlotte game, like the amount of games that they tricked off.
Yeah, there's no way.
I would imagine. Let's see here. Can we get an against the spread? Let's see here. There's
got
to be available.
What
really?
Is it, Nate?
From statmuse.com. Beautiful. Would you guys like to take a guess? There's 70 games so far.
Ooh.
And this is when they're the favorite.
Just against the spread in general.
Yeah.
So it could be favorite or, like,
sure.
If you're they the underdog, you get beat by.
So right? If the Kings are plus six, they stay within.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha. That would be.
80, the 70 games. Man. Well.
I'll say 30 and 40.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's got to be some ties in there.
I'm just going to do the amount of times that they've actually done it. And out of 70 games, I would say they've covered the spread.
Really thinking about
this. I know.
27 times.
27 times. Okay. Well, let's start off with saying there's one push. So one where they broke even, which is relatively rare because, you know, the line has to be a solid number, not a half number.
Right.
The Kings are 35-34 against the spread, almost dead even.
Wow.
So it's just not, it's a toss-up.
So it is a toss-up every single time.
Essentially, yeah.
It's truly a toss-up. Yeah. And it can be a toss-up when they're favorites by 16 points.
Yep.
You just never know.
It's
you
so
never
ugly,
know
yeah.
either way. That's incredible, but it's also very fitting. Like, you know, that really does, if anything, that really does tell the number of just how inconsistent this team has been, that even the great, like, the massive amount of numbers collected in order to create spreads, mm-hmm. even they can't figure it out. Even they cannot figure out on a given night. It is literally, like you said, it's a toss-up on whether or not anybody, even the best at doing this, we'll be able to project how the Kings are going to go. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and LeBron, by the way, as we get into some clips from LeBron's podcast, did you see now Savannah is dropping a podcast?
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be hers, but I saw she was on it, on a podcast.
Okay.
I have not seen
it. I thought it was
going
to be hers, which is just hilarious to me.
Yeah.
My question is, what took you so long with everybody else and,
you know,
and
yeah.
So why
I'd
not?
Imagine Bron's got to have a piece of that, right? Like, he's got to probably say, like, hey, like, we all know that what I've built here. Let's not ruin, you know, let's not ruin this with a couple podcast episodes airing out all our dirty laundry here.
Let's hear from LeBron on running the split action and how a lot of teams aren't able to do it, but the Kings are.
I do understand why most teams don't run it, because they don't have the personnel. Certain teams that, like, right now Mike Brown in Sacramento is kind of running some split action. Yeah. He has those shooters. He has you know, obviously Kevin Herter. You know, he has the kid Keegan Murray, who can shoot the piss out the ball, and also the speed of De'Aaron Fox. You know, they play a lot of pinch posts with Demonis, who's now triple-double threat every game.
You need a passer like Sabonis.
You have to have a passer.
How many teams have a guy like that?
One. Jokic, obviously. Maybe two. But, yeah, I mean, it's really something special that they've got. And, you know, for those who don't, split action is pretty much just kind of what it sounds like. It's you run, you know, you essentially run something to where, you know, you can either – You have two options. You can either have somebody driving off of a pick and roll, or you have somebody who's coming up top to kind of like a dribble handoff. Essentially, it's two different options in which you have. And the reason why Sabonis is the perfect person to do it is because not many bigs have the capability of having that kind of passing vision, and then it allows you to have your real shooters and a real threat in De'Aaron Fox be a part of the action itself. You don't have to have your best passer, who's usually a guard, be the person who's making that decision. By having Sabonis be a big who's able to do that, it frees you up to just have so many better options at attacking. And, you know, it's something like LeBron says, Mike Brown dabbles in it, but, you know, we talked about it a little bit after Tuesday. Like, the Kings do fall in love with their dribble handoffs a lot, and I think the split action is one of the counters off of it, but it's just not something they go to all of the time. And that's kind of what Bron is saying, is like, I'm surprised more teams don't just run the hell out of it.
They clearly don't do it a lot, because I don't even really recall it happening too often. I don't know if that's a lack of not having Kevin Herter, but when it does happen, do you think that it's coming out of timeouts and not necessarily it's not an inbounds play, but do you think Mike Brown is telling them when to run it?
This
offense is really confusing.
It's just a counter. Like, it's one of the things where you run the handoff, you run everything, and it's just something that forms out of the natural motion of the offense. So it's not necessarily something you call. It's just, hey, you know, yeah, we're running this. They're giving us this look. It gives us an opportunity to run the split action, and you know, it can run off of that. So it's not necessarily something that's directly called. Again, this is where Mike Brown puts the ball in his players' court, and he says, you guys have to have the basketball IQ to recognize this yourself and try and exploit it. Maybe you could argue Mike Brown does need to have a bigger hand in calling those kind of things out, but that's where the trust in his players goes. And, you know, yeah, if you feel like they don't run it enough, it's probably because the players themselves don't call it enough, or don't try and, you know, make the first action work so much that they don't even get to the counter. So, you know, yeah, in a way, it's kind of not really Mike Brown's decision to run that as often as they probably should.
Do you think there's somebody out there that listens to this show every day? And of course they do, because
yes,
that's just growing show in Sacramento.
Yeah.
Do you think there's somebody out there that hears us talking and hears us say, that's not Mike Brown's call, that's not what Mike Brown's supposed to do, that's not Mike Brown's fault? Do you think there's anybody out there that wonders, well, what is Mike Brown actually there to do?
On game days, I mean, it's really just, I don't want to minimize what he's doing, but it's, you know, it's subbing people in and out. It's making sure people are doing the things. But, like, I say it all the time, like, Mike Brown is a lot more of like a baseball manager than like a football coach, where, again, football coaches, every single play, you're dialing it in. Kyle Shanahan's having ultimate say over everything that's going on. You know, a lot of Mike Brown's work and his coaching staff's work is done before the game. That's what the game plan is for. That's what watching film is for. Mike Brown's going to practice as much as any coach is in the NBA. He's going to get his players in a situation to be ready, but his style of play requires a lot of basketball IQ. And I think that's just how it is he is asking his players who are pros and the best in at what they do to have the ball in their hands. And I think that's what a lot of players would prefer. I think coaches a lot of the times get in the way of players' greatness. And I think a lot of players, that's why they would probably consider Mike Brown a player's coach. He really does say, I'm going to trust my guys to make the right decisions. And I know that if they don't, people are going to look back at me and say, why isn't your team doing this? Why don't you have more of a say? And, I think it's a completely fair criticism to have. It's just, that's just the way Mike Brown coaches.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, it's kind of like, I wouldn't say it's like Gabe Kapler, but in a way it is a bit of saying, I'm going to live with the results. I might not do what everybody says I should do, but I just believe that this is the best way of doing this job. And, it might end up coming back to haunt me, but at the end of the day, I'm going to go down how I feel is the best way of coaching these guys.
Yeah, and you hear a lot of the post-game presser, and it's a lot of, we didn't do this, we didn't do that, and I do think that he puts so much on the fact that they do practice a lot,
yes.
And there's been conversations about how much they practice.
Too much, maybe.
Too much, and maybe that is why his post-games a lot will sound like him talking as far as them versus him.
Yeah.
And the only reason it sounds like that is just because of, hey, we do practice a lot and we're trying to put everybody into the right position. By the time game time comes around, it's too late to make any decisions. If he's going to Kessler Edwards, we can look at it and say, and by the way, when they did do that in Washington, it did work.
Yes,
they lost
it did.
The game, so nobody talked about it. But it actually did work. But that is not something that he wants to do. That is because of somebody not doing their job.
Yes.
So those moves, he is there. If people aren't doing what we discussed in practice and in film, then I'm here to figure out, okay, who do I think can do that? But on game day, it's not the same as NCAA March Madness gets started today. Or get started back today, it's not the same as March Madness or college or high school where there's a lot of in-game. The rotations are essentially set.
Yeah.
If you're breaking a rotation, that's because somebody's either playing better than you expected or somebody's playing worse than you expected.
Yep.
So I do think it is interesting on game day, somebody could say, well, what is it that he does? And it's a test to everything you've
Stay
worked on.
Stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
Yeah, it's everything that you've worked on in practice leading up to it versus we don't know what's going to happen today, so that's why I'm here to make sure it's not CYO.
Yeah, exactly.
But other coaches do coach like that.
Yeah.
But a lot of it goes back to the leadership and the Draymond thing. A lot of it is y'all know what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I'll do you one better, especially at this point in the season.
Yep.
This isn't game.
We've been running this 70 games.
Yes.
So.
This is not game 15. This is not game 7. Nope.
Same players, right?
You got 10 games left to figure it out if you haven't already.
Yeah. What else am I going to tell you that's new here?
Nothing.
I would hope not.
There's absolutely nothing. And Kessler Edwards having to play against the Wizards, we'll move forward, but now you just lost by 36 points. Does Mike Brown, it's the same conversation as the Draymond thing and the leadership thing. Do I need to tell you that you stunk?
Right.
I'm pretty sure you know.
We all know.
Do I need to tell you that you blew an opportunity? I'm pretty sure you know. When we return, speaking of blowouts, are the blowouts as bad as we think? We look at the point differential for the Kings. Also more from JJ and LeBron as they talk about why teams should or should not blitz Luka Doncic. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
From the 530, the Kings are 10-2 on Fridays. And Chris says that they are 4-4 on Sundays. I don't like Sunday games. We don't have to worry about that. So
I feel like they haven't played that many Sunday games this year.
Right.
I'm going to be honest with you.
The Sunday games is all now. It's all now just messed up for me because the baby race that I did was on a Sunday. And that's when we went.
You're boycotting?
I'm not boycotting, but they also lost that game. I lost. Yeah. My family lost, and then the Kings lost. And that was to the Rockets.
Jeopardy. Yeah.
So a lot of losses. So I don't like Sunday games, but we don't have to worry about that now, or for now. It's a Friday game where the Kings are 10-2, and that is good. I like that. So you know what? That's because the Kings, they understand a Friday beam is what everybody enjoys. And it's going to be hopping tomorrow. It is. What is the weather going to be like? I know the rain is coming back.
Not great.
I think the rain's tomorrow, isn't it?
Is the rain tomorrow?
I do like a rainy beam, though. It's kind of cool. It's like cyberpunk, neon, future, cool. You know what I'm talking
about?
This, Blade Runner. Blade Runner.
What is this, Ready Player One? What are you talking about?
I don't know, dude. I like cinema. So what?
Well, hopefully we do get that Tron Ready Player One beam.
Definitely not Ready Player One. I'm going to throw that out there. Why? It's just not.
Two great movies. Two of my favorite movies, by the way.
Tron and Ready Player One?
Yes, sir.
The first Tron or the sequel, I guess.
Yeah.
You know they got another one coming with Jared Leto, I think?
I did know that.
Yeah.
And I can't wait.
The world's clamoring for it.
Uh-huh. And Ready Player Two.
I did see that, yes.
Great, man.
That's Spielberg, right? Okay.
Of course it is.
It is, sure. Yeah.
That's right.
I have no idea. I've seen none of those.
Well, hopefully we get that rainy beam tomorrow night, and the way the Kings are going to be able to do it is by playing much, 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 much better than they did earlier in the week. Point differential has been really interesting. So the point differential is essentially per game, where are you at as far as on average, are you winning or losing games? And then they throw it all into a pile and average it. And this really just speaks to the blowouts and how bad or how good they've been. And interestingly enough, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The Kings are, as far as point differential, I think they're in the top 15, Chris. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. They are 16 in point differential, and they're at 1.04. So on average, they are scoring one more point than their opponents. So that kind of speaks to the blowout thing and how the blowout thing has been bad. That tells me that even with some abysmal blowouts, they are still right. They're still average, I would say, as far as what teams are doing. So if they just stopped getting blown out, they'd be much higher up there. And, you know, that halftime stat that we read off yesterday, what is it? 7-24 when trailing at half. That's terrible.
It's not great.
That's terrible.
Yeah, and I'm looking at it too. The Kings have the second most 10-point losses of any of the playoff or play-in teams. They have 17. In 10-point games, they are 22-17, meaning they've won 22 games by 10 points. They have lost 17 games by 10 points as well. The only other team, funny enough, that has more losses in the Western Conference by 10 or plus, Dallas Mavericks, who are 26-19. So they've blown a couple more teams out, but they've also gotten blown out two more times than the Kings. So, you know, it's not something that's necessarily specifically unique to the Kings, but definitely has probably gotten, you know, again, when we talk about at the end of the season, you kind of are who your record says you are. That's one of those numbers where, you know, yeah, the Kings being blown out more than just about any of the other play-in teams does end up coming back to bite you. And I do think that this team, I just think the story of this season is going to be missed opportunities. It's going to be, wow, that was that year that we lost to all of the worst teams in the NBA. All and then them. You look at the standings at the end of the season, and if you just simply flip those results, well, then it's going to be the difference of the Kings in the 7 seed versus the Kings in the 4 seed. And I just think that that's going to be the lasting legacy, at least of the regular season. But that's what's so great about the playoffs, man, is that truly all of that can change. That entire narrative can be flipped if the Kings have a successful postseason. Barely anybody's going to remember about the ups and downs of the regular season. It's just going to be about how they turned it around in the playoffs and really, you know, continued to build momentum for the season following.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you're going to look back on this season. I wouldn't say of what if, but I would look at it and say, all right, we were a bit stuck because this was the Beam team. You felt like you owed it to them to run it back. You can't really complain about them running it back just because of how much fluctuation you've had with rosters throughout the playoff drought. So you really had no choice but to run it back, but you would have liked for it to end in a different way, and it's not over yet, but they are really up against it here, and they have really missed some opportunities to where they're going to have to play lights out basketball, the same type of light. I mean, the thing is, I think this is, after looking at the schedule again, Chris, you've said a lot about the Suns and their tough schedule. The Kings' schedule isn't literally as tough as the Suns, but if I'm a Mavericks fan, as we talked to Kevin Gray Jr. Right. a little bit earlier, you can catch that interview on YouTube if you missed it. If I'm a Mavericks fan, I'm kind of thinking, we got this in the bag.
Yeah, it's just not even close. I mean, looking at it, even like I'm looking at just the, what is this? This is the 4-10 seeds. I'm looking at Clippers, Kings, Suns, Mavericks, and Pelicans schedules. Clippers, they have two games against Phoenix. They have a game against Cleveland. They have a game against Denver. They have a game against Sacramento. They have another game against Orlando. Or they played Orlando yesterday. Or no, I'm sorry, they play Orlando tomorrow. The Pelicans, they have a game against Boston, against OKC, against Milwaukee, against Orlando, two against Phoenix, one against Sac. Everybody's got tough matchups. And then you go to Dallas and, yeah, you know, absolutely, like was said earlier, the Rockets have won 10 games in a row, but the Rockets twice, Golden State twice, Miami, those are all play-in teams. Mm-hmm. Like those are not tough competition when you're talking about the fact that, yeah, we've talked about Phoenix's schedule. The Kings have to go east and play in Boston. They have to go play in OKC. There's no way that you can look at the Kings' schedule and not just say, that's tough. Like, objectively, that is just a hard schedule to get through. And, yeah, you could try and compare them with Phoenix, but in reality, it's all pretty much created equal. They're both really, really tough schedules that you're going to have to earn all of those wins if you're going to get them.
Yeah, the bottom line is we'd have to see the Kings do something that they haven't done all season.
Done all year.
And whether or not you believe that they can do that, we're going to figure it out either way. When we return, we will hear from JJ and LeBron as they talk about why teams should or should not blitz Luka, and do you want the Kings to continue to blitz Luka tomorrow night? Sal's and Watkins, Sactown Sports.
Live and local.
This is Sactown Sports.
All guests and callers, join us from the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop, 916-339-1140. We are currently underway. Major League Baseball opening day. Mike Trout started the game off. They are in Baltimore as the Orioles look to continue to grow. Last season was outstanding for the Orioles. Basically the surprise of the season, I'd say. Mike Trout getting it started out hot with a home run. Mike Trout, weirdly a guy that doesn't really get talked about. He's dealt with some injuries. People even saying that he has slipped all the way down to underrated at this point with all of the new guys that are I guess more flashy and not just flashy. I mean, they're legit, right?
Yeah.
If you're talking about the Ronald Acuñas and Julio Rodriguez and Juan Soto's, the list goes on and on. Not too many people talk about Mike Trout anymore on that losing team out there in Anaheim. So Mike Trout trying to remind people, I still got it.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, It'll be interesting to see how it goes. I mean, I know he had a bit of a, I guess, relatively for Mike Trout, a down season last year. But, yeah, I mean, I was telling you, I just did a fantasy baseball draft, and Mike Trout was, like, one of, like, the 100. Like, he was in the hundreds in terms of people supposed to be selected. And I was like, something tells me that Mike Trout's going to have something more to say before his career
is all
said.
You're doing fantasy baseball, Chris? That doesn't sound like you.
I did it. Started it last year. I'm actually in a league with Frankie. Me and Frankie are in the same league.
Frankie makes more sense.
Yeah. I mean, I'm more doing it just so I have a good idea of what's going on.
I got a question for you guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
More surprising season last year. Orioles, Detroit Lions, Sacramento Kings.
Probably the Orioles.
Maybe give it a ranking.
I mean, the Kings, they were right on the cusp the year before of the play-in,
not really.
And they blew it up really after the trade, and it was
just
not blew it up, but.
The Orioles.
The Kings probably.
Might be the Kings.
Detroit performed the best of all of them. I mean, they literally were right there from a Super Bowl. The Kings might have been the most surprising. There's been a lot of noise around the Lions for a couple years. You could probably more speak to the noise around the Orioles. Like, I mean, they've had prospects for so long.
It was basically the Astros thing. You keep stockpiling picks and picks, and you
at some point
hit on
strike gold.
So that's why I think it might be the Kings.
Yeah, I guess so. Just in terms of sheer surprise, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, to finish as a 3 seed. Yeah, probably the Kings. It's a good question, though. It's a really good question.
Yeah, I would probably say the Kings. Yeah, to that point, not just making the playoffs, being a 3 seed.
Yeah,
and yeah, I would probably say the Sacramento Kings. Well, they're looking to do that again, and the way they're going to do it is by hopefully beating the Mavericks tomorrow night. And something that we saw that we haven't seen in a bit since Ellis Island made his appearance, Keon Ellis, was blitzing. Okay, I really don't even think they blitzed Jalen Brunson that much when the Kings faced the Knicks a couple weeks ago. And you saw things change because Luka's a bigger guy. It's not as if they were blitzing Kyrie. They were blitzing Luka. And LeBron James on his podcast had some things to say about the blitzing. And Chris, you already heard the sound as we are about to play it. What did you think about the blitzing? This is essentially what you've been saying.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of what I've been saying for a while now is, you know, it just doesn't really make a ton of sense. If you're going to double a guy like Luka, yeah, it might make sense off of blitzing is kind of in nature off of a pick and roll, but, you know, it makes a lot of sense if you're going to pressure him immediately after the pick and roll so that he has a tougher time with passing angles and things like that. But if you're just going to send a general double team at Luka, giving him space to kind of take a step back. Mike Brown talked about them extending the pick and roll. If you're going to give Luka some room to get the screen and then as the blitz is happening, kind of take a couple steps back to survey the defense a little more, he's just going to carve you apart. Like, he's one of I think there's like 3 guys in the league that I would truly trust every single time to make the right decision, and that's Luka, Jokic, and LeBron. I think 10 times out of 10, if you double those guys, they're going to find the open man, regardless of if they're in the corner, if they're slashing, anything like that. I just think it's a really, really risky proposition. It's high risk, and I guess it may be high reward, but it feels like more times than not, it's not going to work out for you.
Let's hear from LeBron and JJ on blitzing Luka.
Blitz numbers, because we're talking about 2 on the ball. And this is interesting. So this year, top 5. Players that have been blitzed and pick and roll. Luka by far, almost 200 more blitzes.
Sure.
And then everybody, the next 4 guys are bunched together. It's Brunson, Anthony Simons, Dame, and Book. Mm-hmm. Top 5 by ISO, Giannis, Kawhi, Julius Randle, Anthony Davis, and Ben Caro. Those are the top,
Ben Caro,
five,
top
by
5 by ISO guys.
Yep. It's interesting. I looked up your blitz numbers in the tracking era, and you were first in ISO doubles in 13 and 14, second in 15, 16, and top 10 in 17, 18, and 19, 20. You've never actually been in the top 20 in blitzes against pick and rolls. Why do you think that is?
Because I make all the right reads.
I think it's that simple.
It's that simple. Teams know they can't blitz me in a pick and roll.
But there's what's interesting about Luka, I think, he's one of a handful of guys in this era that can make any pass against a double team.
Any.
James is one of them.
Yep.
You are for sure. Luka's one of them.
Yep.
So why are you blitzing him?
I don't understand it. Especially with the shooting they surround him too. It doesn't make sense.
Like, I get the Brunson thing has been since Randall's out.
Yeah.
The uptick in blitzes has gone way up,
they
right?
They don't have that.
I get that.
Yeah, for sure.
I get that.
I get that as well. You know, you have to – he's a one-head monster right now with the Knicks, and they blitzing him and making other guys beat him. I saw Golden State do it a lot last night as well before our game. But, yeah, it doesn't – because he's going to make every read and – when Tim Hardaway is hitting 6 or 7 threes, you're done.
Yeah.
Kyrie's going to do what Kyrie does.
Yeah.
Luka's going to do what he does. But when you get Tim Hardaway hitting 6 or 7 threes, and in our game earlier this year, we blitzed Luka and Dante Exum hit 5.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. 6 threes. Yeah, that.
They're going to make the right – that's literally what we just watched.
I was like, oh, man. He got a little bit too specific there, and it started to hurt.
Yeah.
Tim Hardaway, I mean, that's exactly what happened, man, is, yeah, you give Luke – I'm surprised that JJ threw James Harden in there. That was surprising. Not really somebody I was thinking of, but, yeah, I mean, I just think you give Luka – if you're going to double Luka and essentially make it a 4-on-3 on the back end, he's going to find an open shooter. He's going to find Tim Hardaway. He's going to find – we didn't even have Josh Green play in that game. He's killed the Kings in the past before. Kyrie's going to be out there on the floor. If PJ Washington's going to be a three-point shooter out there on the floor, you just can't leave those guys open, and that's the tough thing about blitzing. That's why, you know, they say Jalen Brunson, it makes sense. They don't have the guys to make you pay. I guess DiVincenzo a bit can make you pay. He's more of a volume shooter. Dallas, the way that they've surrounded Luka with just pure shooters – you can't give those guys open looks.
So are you saying, I guess the question is, okay, so then what do you do? Just let Luka give, just try to stop Luka and hopefully he doesn't give you 50?
Yeah, I mean, that's what makes Luka so tough. That's why he's one of the best in the NBA, because you have, it's a business decision. You got to figure out, okay, do we want Luka to beat us or do we want him to make his teammates beat us? And that's the dilemma you're in. That's what just happened to the Kings. The Kings stopped Luka in that second half, but then look what happened. Tim Hardaway starts going off. Kyrie Irving starts going off. You can't shut off all of those faucets, and that's why it's taken a while for Dallas to build out what they have. But yeah, it's pick your poison, man. It's either Luka's going to kill you or everybody else is. And that's why you have a top X, whatever, 5'10" player in the NBA. That's the luxury of having it, man.
30 points, something like that, and that's not what the Kings have. I think they're going to blitz him again tomorrow.
I'm sure they will.
I think
teams have done it all season long. That's what they said. He was number one in pick and roll blitzes. It doesn't make sense, but you got to do it.
It makes sense when they're shooting. Well, that's what's crazy, and that's what we heard earlier from Kevin Gray Jr. They are on a really good stretch, and they have not been shooting the three ball well.
Right.
So it's not just, well, maybe they'll miss shots today. They have missed shots on blitzes, and they've still won games. That's a problem.
Yeah, and that's what makes them so scary. That's why, and it's the same situation with the Kings. That's why you have to commit on the defensive side of the ball. This is not a one side of the ball sport. You can't just dominate on offense and win games. It's the defense that really makes you deadly. You could be a really fun team. You can be an exciting team, just like the Kings were last year. But nobody's going to take you seriously, and you're not going to be an actual title contender until you play defense. You've got to be able to win in multiple ways, and that's exactly what we were talking about earlier is Dallas has now had the ability, and the Kings have their past 10 games before Tuesday, of winning on the offensive side of the ball or on the defensive side of the ball. Unfortunately for us, Dallas gave it to us on both ends. They had their A game on offense, and defensively, Kings didn't even score 100. So that's what it looks like if you're able to put it together, both sides of the ball together for one game. But I'm sure Dallas, if that game's going to be ugly on Friday, I'm sure Dallas has the capability now of winning 102 to 108. So that's what makes a team like them so scary when they're locked in on defense. But the reverse is for the Kings. They can be that good, too. They just have to commit on the defensive end, and you can't allow Dallas to score 136 or whatever it was the other day.
Eric Armstead also has a podcast, and he was recently on it. He said, first episode of season two, and he's talking about, obviously, his departure from the 49ers. He had a very interesting career with the 49ers. A lot of people thought that he didn't really live up to expectations, but he did show up in big games as well. We'll definitely hear from Nate, one of our Niners insiders on this, who doubles as a board op slash producer for us. And just looking at the contract, I mean, over 5 years, 2020. So he was with the Niners from 2015 to 2024. His first contract, that which was entry level, was $9.8 million. Okay, he signed a contract in 2020, which was 5 years, $85 million. And he still feels disrespected. Most recently, he signed a 3-year deal for $43 million. This man is doing well.
Yeah,
and he's from Sacramento too.
Yes, shout out.
That's a lot of cash flow. I'm not in anybody's pockets, but he's doing very well.
Love that
for himself. And he's still, and whatever he's getting from this podcast as well. He's on the podcast talking about how he felt, what was it, quote, extremely disrespected for how things ended. Let's hear from Eric Armstead as he talks about his time with the Niners.
A lot has happened this offseason. I'm no longer with the 49ers. I have a new team. First off, like, I want to say, like, I don't have any animosity towards the organization, Kyle, John, the York family. I did feel extremely disrespected. They extended an offer to me, $1 million, 9 years of me being there. The fans deserve to know what happened. You know, I had to make some decisions.
Yeah, and if you heard that little cutoff right there, that was in the clip itself. He cut off the actual amount of dollars that they offered him, because he's like, I feel extremely disrespected. They offered me dollars. And
interesting.
I don't know if that's like a teaser, because this was all in a like you said, it's him setting up episode 1, season 2 of my pod. I don't know if he's going to reveal exactly what that dollar figure was, or you know, if that's just a really good, really, really good podcast tease right there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely seems as if something in that negotiation process went awry. But it, you know, I think we've, you know, from the analyst, or we've been talking about this team for the past year or so perspective, we've kind of seen this coming as well. I think that, you know, Eric, I think, was optimistic that they would get something done. I know there was talk that maybe they were just going to restructure the deal and maybe figure something out there. Sounds to me like Eric maybe was expecting to get a bit. I mean, you said he was there for 9 years. I think he was expecting to get a little bit of some veteran treatment, a little bit of good locker room presence treatment. He's been there. Walter Payton, man of the year representative for a long time now. I think he kind of expected a bit more respect than what he ended up getting. We can't really speak to exactly how disrespectful the offer is until we hear exactly what that figure was.
How often do players not feel disrespected? Unless you stay somewhere forever.
Right. Udonis Haslam.
Right, right. At some point, whether it's, I remember watching the...
I mean, we just went this with Brandon Crawford, right?
Yeah, exactly. And how much of it is them being realistic? How much of that is them having that mindset that also helped them get to the pro level? But it gets to a point where, all right, man, everybody is disrespected.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody deserves more money.
Yeah.
Everybody deserves this. He was in a peculiar situation because of the fact that he did show up in a lot of big games.
Yeah, right.
But we cannot pay you to only show up in big games.
Right.
We got to pay you to show up in every game. And that's how things end. He goes off to Jacksonville, who are also are interested in Brandon Ayuk. So they're interested in everybody from the Niners. And I think he'll be remembered as somebody who had some good moments, but ultimately you just hope that you had more. Nate, what were your thoughts on Eric Armstead and everything that he had to say and really just his career with the Niners.
So Chris just asked me this too, or a similar question in the break. Buckner or Armstead was the right move made back then. To answer your question first, I got nothing but love for Eric Armstead, especially Elk Grove guy. I think that's awesome. I mean, this is the business, like you guys were saying. I'm a huge fan. I went pretty in-depth on this on Return of the Empire this week, if you guys want to listen. Mm-hmm. But
is that on YouTube?
This week was it's podcast only. Every episode's are on our pod, so iTunes, all those spots, but wherever. YouTube when we're live during the season. Thanks for asking.
Yes.
Eric Armstead, I got nothing but love. The disrespect thing is fine. I appreciate what he said just now. Like, seems like he had a personal connection with those guys. I mean, he's a 10-year pro. It's you know, he's getting deep into his career, so he's gonna have to go be a role player somewhere else. Because he didn't want to play ball and didn't want to restructure like every other veteran on this team seemingly did this year. Even guys down to, Juszczyk. Yeah, Juszczyk. Kittle restructured. Warner restructured. Sorry, I got some.
You're good.
I got some going on in my throat. I just think it was time. And he has a relationship with Trent Baalke.
Right.
I think they overlapped 1 year. In San Francisco, so going to Jacksonville where he is the GM made sense. They need help on the front line. They need help in a lot of places. But I'm not mad. Nothing. I got nothing but love for Eric. He might be a jersey I have someday. Maybe I should already have one. I don't know. I mean, I'm rocking. Yeah, it's but when you ask Buckner over Armstead, my opinion is that it was a financial thing at the time. It was a money thing. I think a big part of John Lynch's game plan changed as a GM when he saw what the Rams did in 21 and they just spent all this money and the cap seemingly was a fake thing and not real. So you could see he made some moves after that, like bringing in McCaffrey and paying these guys different ways. And obviously Trey Lance was going to be a part of that. And now it's Brock with the paying the quarterback a low amount of money. But I'm not upset when they let go of Buckner. I'm here for Armstead. Nothing but love, really, from my point of view, at all. But also, I guess the Eric Armstead podcast is going to drop here at 1 p.m. So we might get that number in the next 10 minutes or so. And if we do, I'll update you guys.
Is there a world where he can feel disrespected just because he's an athlete, but he can feel disrespected? But not that the Niners disrespected him. I don't know how to say it, because obviously the Niners do respect him.
Right.
But it's a production thing. Mm-hmm. And it's, hey, and they have the same projections that other people have. And you've been with a team and a franchise for so long. It's, hey, we're not trying to disrespect you here. This is what it seems like to me. And if you look at the numbers, Eric, I don't really know how you can say otherwise. For this, if you want to say on this team, everybody knows our situation. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows our situation.
I think a big thing is injury, though, too, is that the injury and not being available. You said production, but I think injury is such a vital part of the NFL and the Niners and Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, the injuries they've had to deal with. Luckily, the past year was relatively well. Take out Hufanga and a couple dings there, and obviously Greenlaw. But I think that is a huge part of this contract was injury.
When we return, March Madness is back. Someone on the Four Letter Network is saying that one of the teams could make the playoffs in the NBA.
Okay.
And I'm not kidding. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.